Via remote, I'm Michael Brown, VOA News. The White House is planning to terminate its coronavirus task force despite the continued spread of the COVID-19 infection here in the United States and a growing death toll from the disease. President Donald Trump confirmed Tuesday the task force, headed by Vice President Mike Pence, will be winding down. During a visit to a factory in Arizona that makes face masks, Trump said Pence and the task force have done a great job, but we're now looking at a little bit of a different form, and that form is safety and opening. Trump declared it is time to reopen the U.S. economy, even if it means more people will fall victim to the coronavirus. Public health officials are cautioning that premature openings of businesses and relaxing social distancing measures could cause a spike in infections, even in communities that have so far been relatively free of the coronavirus, for which there is no vaccine. Approximately 1.2 million people here in the U.S. are confirmed to have been infected by the coronavirus, with more than 70,000 reported deaths, the most of any country. A government scientist here in the U.S. says he was ousted from his job after raising concerns that the Trump administration wanted to flood coronavirus hotspots like New York and New Jersey with a malaria drug. Despite little scientific evidence, it helped. Rick Bright filed a complaint Tuesday with the Office of Special Counsel, a government agency responsible for whistleblower complaints. He's the former director of the Biomedical Advanced Research and Development Authority. Bright alleges he was removed from his job and assigned to a lesser job because he resisted political pressure to allow widespread use of hydroxychloroquine, a malaria drug favored by Trump. This is VOA News. South Korean baseball players opened their 2020 season in empty stadiums Tuesday as the country slowly returns to normal, from the coronavirus pandemic. Real-life cheering fans were replaced by still pictures of masked fans lined across the empty seats at the first five games of the Korea Baseball Organization season. The league has also imposed strict guidelines for players and umpires to keep them safe, including mandatory temperature checks before each game and requiring umpires and coaches to wear face masks. Handshakes and high fives are prohibited, as well as chewing tobacco to prevent spitting. The U.S. National Football League is set to announce its schedule on Thursday, but has decided to abandon plans to hold games this season in London and Mexico City. Two pharmaceutical companies said Tuesday their experimental coronavirus vaccine is being delivered in the U.S. for initial human testing. U.S. drug maker Pfizer and Germany's BioNTech said if the trials proved the vaccine is safe and effective, it could be ready for broad distribution here in the United States by the end of the year. The head of Germany's Disease Control Institute said Tuesday the rate of new COVID-19 infections in that country continues to drop, but says a second wave or even a third wave of infections is likely. The president of the Robert Koch Institute warned it is the nature of a virus in a pandemic to stay active until 60 to 70% of the population has been infected. That is why the institute's leader say there is a great certainty among scientists that there is a second wave, and many also assume there will be a third wave. Germany is in the process of loosening some social and economic restrictions it put in place in March to control the spread of the coronavirus. Some high-end restaurants in New York City here in the U.S. have stepped up to feed hordes of hungry healthcare workers as the city battles the pandemic. Access to quick, healthy meals has been limited for essential workers since a statewide lockdown was imposed back in March. Many restaurants and takeout businesses have temporarily closed because of lack of demand. And former President Barack Obama will be the commencement speaker this month at what may be the world's largest high school graduation ceremony. With millions of high school students missing their traditional graduation ceremonies because of the coronavirus, Obama will address the Highlight Graduate Together America Honors the High School Class of 2020 on May 16th. For more news, join us at voanews.com. Via remote, I'm Michael Brown, VOA News.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, May 6th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Experts say African countries should reopen their economies gradually.
The economic impact of the pandemic is going to be great anyway, and the measures are merely sharpening and making that worse on the most vulnerable populations. So there needs to be a combination of gradually releasing, analyzing the most critical economic activities that are to continue.
The WFP says conflict, COVID-19, and others are driving West Africa's looming mass hunger. The impact of COVID-19 on the proposed African continental free trade area. Some rural Zimbabweans say they are being evicted from their ancestral land. And the UN launches an emergency appeal for COVID-19 response in Malawi.
She spoke to VOA via WhatsApp.
The reason why we are making this appeal is we don't need to have the peak of crisis in Malawi. At the same time, to mitigate the secondary impacts of COVID-19.
A Cameroon separatist spokesperson responds to recent government attacks and will examine the impact of declining global oil prices on South Sudan's economy. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Organization, Africa Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, and World Economic Forum have issued guidelines to African countries looking to open up their economies after weeks of lockdown due to the coronavirus. Health authorities are concerned that opening up too quickly could entail a fresh wave of COVID-19 cases on the continent. Simon Marks reports from Addis Ababa.
With the coronavirus having thrown many African economies into a deep freeze, many governments are facing pressure to end lockdowns and travel restrictions so people can get back to work. But health experts say any country planning to reopen for business needs to do so gradually and based on science-based reasoning. In a new report, the WHO, Africa CDC, World Economic Forum, and Vital Strategies, an organization that helps governments strengthen their public health systems, say governments should first open up vital sectors of their economies and only when the data show it is safe to do so. They say the key figures to watch are the number of coronavirus cases, the extent of testing, and whether any outbreaks are accelerating. Machidiso Moeti, the World Health Organization Regional Director for Africa, said in a video conference that authorities have to balance economic concerns with consideration of public health.
The economic impact of the pandemic is going to be great anyway, and the measures are merely sharpening and making that worse on the most vulnerable populations. So there needs to be a combination of gradually releasing, analyzing the most critical economic activities that are to continue, including in some countries, agriculture. We've been very concerned about the lockdowns and their impact on agriculture for the future, not only for now.
Many Africans remain anxious about the near future. People in 20 African countries were surveyed for the report. John Nkangasong, director of the Africa CDC, said the report showed that 44% of respondents said they felt they were at high personal risk to COVID-19, while nearly 70% of people acknowledged that food and water would be a problem if they were required to remain at home for 2 weeks. He had this advice for Nigeria as it looks to open up again.
They should continue to expand and strengthen their public health systems, especially the testing capacity, and not just in the major cities of Lagos and Abuja, but all through the entire country. That way they will be able to pick up cases as they emerge, isolate them, and trace their contacts. That's the only way you can be sure to continue to function while maintaining a good handle, a public health handle on the situation in the country.
Nkangasong said the report made three key recommendations to governments across Africa. First, while caseloads are low, build up public health systems to test, trace, isolate and treat cases. Second, monitor data on how public health and social distancing measures affect the spread of the virus. And last, convince communities to adapt health measures so that people's livelihoods can be protected. Simon Marks for VOA News, Addis Ababa.
A recent UN assessment estimates that more than 21 million people across West Africa will be short of food during the coming lean season between June and August, when food stocks are at the lowest. UN officials report they will need urgent assistance from the international community to survive. Lisa Schlein's reports from Geneva.
Armed conflict, widespread displacement, and climate change are pushing millions of people across West Africa, including the volatile Sahel region, into hunger. Added to this toxic mix is COVID-19. The World Food Program warns the pandemic is likely to more than double the number of people facing hunger by the end of the year to 43 million. It says the urban poor, who live hand to mouth, are most at risk. It explains people in cities depend on markets for food, and they have little ability to store and save food or money. WFP spokeswoman Elizabeth Beers says $74 million is urgently needed to provide crucial aid for the next 6 months in West Africa. She says the needs are likely to increase as the impact of COVID-19 becomes clearer.
If the response is inadequate, it would put the future well-being of millions of people in the region at stake, particularly women and young children, and could spell civil unrest in parts of a region already challenged by insecurity and violent extremism.
Beer says the WFP fears an estimated 12 million children could be acutely malnourished during the June to August lean season, up from 8.2 million in the same period last year. She says WFP is planning to pre-position a six-month supply of food stocks in the region. She says this will ensure enough life-saving assistance is available in case COVID-19 travel restrictions lead to possible disruptions to supply chains. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The COVID-19 outbreak might have a slowdown effect on implementing the proposed African Continental Free Trade Area, or the AFTA, but proponents say it will still go through. Paulo Gomes, co-president of the Afro Champions Initiatives, spoke to Ricky Stryak about the potential of the continent-wide trade area.
We attribute this effort of ending the practice in Sudan to the efforts of the Sudanese women, who have been at the forefront in terms of securing this victory. I plead Sudan still several laws that are discriminatory against women that kind of curb their full potential and violate their rights. But I'm sure the coalition that exists there of women's groups should have been part of the efforts to bring the regime change are at it in terms of ensuring that all these laws are amended.
How integral to the changing of to the criminalization of FGM were the same groups of women who were at the forefront of the movement that in fact ended the regime of Bashir in 2019?
The change of the regime, was triggered by many things. You know, the social pressures that the communities were facing. Women were the ones who played a big role. Almost 50% of the protesters are reported to have been a woman. So once things had cooled down and Bashir was removed, they mobilized to form a coalition that is pushing for change. And one of the things they have aimed at is to ensure that women are getting positions in high level and are at the table. But also they managed to insist and lobby hard for the removal of what they call the public order law, where the regime used to kind of like discipline citizens. So women were, for example, not allowed to wear trousers or miniskirts or, things like that. So that has now been removed.
And you mentioned that there are, this law isn't the only one that's kind of being targeted. Can you tell me what's next?
Definitely child marriage. Yeah, that's one of the laws. In fact, it's not a law, basically, but it allows guardians, the judge, to marry off girls at 10 in their best interests. So judges have the discretion to just agree to a marriage of a young girl, So that is something unacceptable and needs to also be changed.
Even though the law on the books might change, often the issue comes with enforcing the law. Do you think that it will be a challenge with this as well?
Yes, like any other places, that challenge remains everywhere. Because countries outlaw, but then they don't invest to ensure that the law is adhered to. And so it remains to see if the government is really serious by introducing investments into training and raising awareness.
The United Nations has launched an emergency appeal in Malawi, one of Africa's poorest nations, for funding to help the country cope with the coronavirus. The UN resident coordinator for Malawi, Maria Jose Torres, says $140 million is needed to support Malawi's preparedness and response for the next 6 months. Malawi has so far confirmed 41 infections and 3 deaths from the coronavirus. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
Torres says the appeal made with non-governmental organizations will target about 7.5 million people most affected by the pandemic. This is nearly half of the country's population. She spoke to VOA via WhatsApp.
The reason why we are making this appeal is we don't need to have the peak of crisis in Malawi. At the same time, to mitigate the secondary impact of COVID-19. So any contributions to this appeal are going to be doing at least 2 things. First, saving lives. Second, to prevent suffering from the most vulnerable.
Last month, Malawi's government launched a separate appeal for $194 to fund its national COVID-19 preparedness and response plan. According to United Nations statistics, around 70% of the population in Malawi live below the international poverty line of $1.90 in U.S. currency per day. Torres says women will get special consideration when financial aid is distributed.
We know that in situations of COVID where there is loss of income and there are less possibilities for the family to cope with the impact, women and girls are normally more exposed to abuse or violence. And we are discussing that with the national institutions to make sure that we all play a role and we continue protecting women and girls from violence.
Torres says single-parent households, street children, the elderly and persons with disabilities will also benefit from the emergency intervention. Simon Munde is acting executive director for the Federation of Disability Organizations in Malawi. He told VOA via telephone interview the appeal has come at a time when his organization is facing challenges in obtaining personal protective equipment. Munde points out that people with disabilities are at greater risk of contracting the coronavirus.
Myself as a person with a visual impairment, I will need maybe an assistant to guide me as I'm moving around town. And that kind of a way, it means that the issue of social distance is now compromised already. If it is a person who is deaf most of the time, sign language interpreters, they have to face each other.
Malawi's Commissioner for Disaster Management Affairs, Wilson Moleni, says the UN's appeal will complement government efforts to contain the pandemic in the country. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre.
Villagers in rural communities in Zimbabwe say business interest groups are evicting them from their ancestral land and that the government is helping the businesses. Ade Gondo has more.
Villagers in Chirezi East area of Chibwezira report that rural council officials gave them eviction notices ordering them off their ancestral homes. They allege that officials from the government's Joint Operations Command visited the area and told local leaders that 9,000 hectares of land has been designated for a grass farming operation. One of the affected members of the community in southeastern Zimbabwe confirmed the reports and says the landholders have formed a committee of community representatives to fight the eviction. He didn't want his name used, but he said the group has reached out to the Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights for assistance. Kumbirai Mafunda is the Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights spokesperson.
So we have noted the reports regarding the pending
evictions in Chiredzi. We are still trying to engage the community in Chiredzi to find out their needs regarding protecting their rights. Not that there's need for respect of the constitution, that no eviction.
The lawyers group has handled similar cases in which businesses and government officials have tried to evict rural residents from their land. One such case was in a community called Chingwizi,
where Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights was then forced to intervene when people were possibly evicted from their residences and placed there where there were no services for them to live. We ended up assisting the people in Chingwizi who were being ill-treated there, some of whom were even assaulted and arrested, who fortunately with the assistance of Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights ended up appearing in court where they were suing the police.
Mafunda added that the government should engage with the communities on development rather than summarily evict people. Efforts to get comment from July Moyo, the Minister of Local Government, were fruitless as his phone went unanswered. However, he has been quoted in Zimbabwean news media confirming that a hay farming operation is planned on thousands of hectares of land in Chiredzi East. A regional human rights group, the Masungo Center for Research, Advocacy and Development, says it opposes the Chiredzi East evictions. Its statement issued on Sunday says the land is to be given to the Den Dairy Company, a major milk-producing company in Zimbabwe. Rights organizations and news media say this eviction is one of several that have taken place in the past couple of years as government removed occupants of ancestral land to make way for development. The planned Chiredzi East evictions threaten the livelihoods of more than 1,000 rural households in a land they say they've occupied for over 500 years. Reporting for VOA, this is Adi Gondo.
Analysts are warning that South Sudan's economy could suffer greatly following the global collapse of oil prices. The country's economy is almost entirely dependent on oil revenues. As Wake Simon Wudu reports from the capital Juba, two analysts say South Sudanese should prepare to face increased economic hardships if declining oil prices are not reversed.
Ahmed Morjan, a senior lecturer of economics at the University of Juba, says the recent sharp drop in oil prices means that a country like South Sudan has to lock down its exports and start consuming from either what it has saved or turn to making loans, adding to already its current loans worth millions of dollars.
Long time ago, we have actually been on the media talking about how the country should have diversified its economy. The resources from the oil should have been diverted and used in developing the other sectors, for instance, agriculture. Because if you look at our imports, most of our imports today compose of consumable goods, in other words, food plus the rest. So had we developed those sectors, and a sector like agriculture, by using the oil money, we could have been saved from such crisis.
Global crude oil prices fell to their lowest in mid-April. Experts say the coronavirus pandemic contributed to the decline as people around the world cut back on travel. Agustino Teng Mayai, a policy analyst with the Soot Institute, a research firm in South Sudan, says a drop in oil prices anywhere means fewer resources for a country like South Sudan. He says it also means the South Sudan government should begin to look for non-oil-dependent means to generate revenue.
Revamping the NRA is key in this respect, and South Sudan will have to do more than it has done recently as far as this institution for it to generate revenues that it requires to run its affairs.
South Sudan's annual budget is almost entirely funded by oil money. For instance, around 86% of the 2019-2020 budget was projected to come from oil revenues and 14% from non-oil revenues. South Sudan oil sold at $1.55 and $1.60 per barrel, respectively, last year. Morjan says South Sudan is at a crossroad as the fall in oil prices will affect the import sector and consequently the socioeconomic lives of the people.
For the meantime, the country will have to begin redesigning its economic policies towards trying at least to look at other sectors, for instance, mineral sector,
can look at tourism. The country has got a greater potential in tourism.
South Sudan's economy is currently struggling. For example, one U.S. dollar exchanges for 285 South Sudanese pounds in the black market. Prolonged conflict has also added to the economic woes. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
A spokesperson for Cameroonian separatists says their resistance will continue until the last man standing. Chris Anu also reiterated that there will be no reconstruction in Cameroon's English-speaking regions unless there is a treaty formally declaring the war over. He was responding to claims by the Cameroon military that it killed about 22 separatist fighters late last month during attacks on separatist camps. Spokesperson Anu says the claims are all part of Cameroon military propaganda.
James, I can assure you that all that you hear from the Cameroon army is war propaganda. Those are efforts to demoralize our Ambazonian restoration forces so they may surrender, and they go on with their own agenda of assimilating the southern Cameroons. I can assure you that nothing happened as such. The 22 that they said they killed in our territory, we are not aware of any of that. You should be asking them for some evidence. Show us the pictures. Show us some video footages to prove the allegation they are making. They don't exist. Indeed, it was Ambazonian fighters a week ago in the town or village of Bafut who killed 7 French Cameroon soldiers. And this, we have the pictures, we have the proofs. We challenge French Cameroon to prove that they killed 22 Ambazonian fighters as they are lodged.
The military said that it neutralized your forces and recovered guns. If all this is true, it seems that the military is bringing the fight to your territory.
Yes, it is true that French Cameroon government soldiers have been on the offensive in our territory for a while now, but that is nothing new. They are supposed to be on the offensive because in this war, they are the aggressors. We did not declare war. We are merely defending our people, defending our territory, and defending our rights. One thing I can assure you, James, is that Ambazonians will continue to do everything if it means this war goes on for the next 30 years. I can assure you Ambazonians are ready to do everything to defend themselves, defend their parents, defend their territory until French Cameroon comes to the negotiation table.
The Cameroon government recently announced a reconstruction project or project in the Anglophone region. This should be good news since one of the complaints of people in the English-speaking region has been that of marginalization.
Reconstruction of what and for what reason? How do you go reconstructing in the middle of war? Even the French authorities, who are the fathers of the French Cameroon government, have told them you do not do reconstruction in the midst of war. We are promising French Cameroon that they will have nowhere to stand to carry out any form of reconstruction in Ambazonia. And no, we are not fighting a war of marginalization or against marginalization. We are fighting a war against colonialism and assimilation. That is what this war is all about.
Chris Anu is the spokesperson for Cameroon's self-proclaimed Ambazonian Republic. He was speaking with us from the U.S. city of Houston in Texas. And that's it for this Wednesday, May 6th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Samson O'Malley, along with all of our engineers. I'm James Butte in Washington saying, have a good day.
The Voice of America's flagship global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. We have hundreds of reporters gathering the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 17 UTC and 2230 UTC. We're also available online at voanews.com.
VOA's Our Voices television program is about more than just sitting and talking about women's issues. It's about listening to them. and bringing their opinions to the table and making sure that their voices are heard. Because our lived experiences, our stories, and our voices will help shape the next generation.
Check your local TV listings and join the conversation each week with our voices on VOA.